It's been almost 3 months since unrest took hold in Ferguson, Missouri. I'm Gina Kaufman. On today's Central Standard, we're going to check back in to hear what life is like there now. Did the media attention change things? What about the protests? And how about yesterday's decisions at the polls? Were voters behaving differently in and around Ferguson after community-wide discussions and protests? Plus, we'll meet a KU professor who studies the commercialization of feelings, emotions, and romantic relationships in post-industrial Japan. That and more after this news. People have been rallying in Ferguson almost continuously since Michael Brown was shot there in August. According to the local rapper Tef Poe, life there has changed irrevocably.
I think for a lot of us here in St. Louis on the ground, it'll always refer back to Michael Brown. Michael Brown's death created this current universe that we're living in.
The current universe that the people of Ferguson, Missouri are living in is the topic for discussion on Central Standard this morning. Have 3 months of protests and media attention changed things? And if so, is that change for the better or the worse? We'll get some perspectives on that, and we'll hear what Ferguson voters experienced yesterday at the polls. I'm Gina Kaufman, turning now to Emmanuelle Berry of St. Louis Public Radio. She's been one of the many people on that news team reporting in Ferguson. A Ferguson resident will be joining the conversation shortly. Hi, Emmanuelle. Thanks for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to dig in on the big issues in day-to-day life of Ferguson very shortly. But before we do, how did things go at the polls yesterday?
So in St. Louis, the biggest election that would impact people in Ferguson more directly would be the election for St. Louis County Executive. Democrat Steve Stenger narrowly won that victory. I think it's just about 2,000 votes separated him and Republican Rick Stream. The Stinger, there was concern that because of Ferguson, that this election would be impacted and it would impact him in particular. Stinger has a relationship with Bob McCullough, who's a prosecuting attorney in the case against Officer Darren Wilson. And because of that relationship, there have been calls by some protest and activists to not vote for him. There was a suggestion to vote for a write-in candidate, Zaki Baruti. In addition to that, there were a group of African-American leaders in local government who essentially put their support behind the Republican candidate, Rick Stream, because they felt like they had been mistreated by the Democratic Party and also with the handling of Ferguson. If Ferguson impacted the election, we can't, you know, exactly say, but the results are Stream is going to be the next St. Louis County Executive. Stinger is going to be the next St. Louis County Executive.
A small handful of media outlets are saying that a voter hotline received calls about police officers asking people in Ferguson to show their ID cards at polling stations. It's totally unclear, at least from what I'm reading, how many people we're talking about here. But the NAACP is saying that voters were being asked for two forms of identification if they didn't present voter ID, and that's even though Missouri isn't a state that legally requires photo ID at the polls. Did anyone there at St. Louis Public Radio see that kind of thing happening, or should we file this under isolated incidents?
I think one of our reporters ran into one isolated incident regarding ID, and we looked into it, and the poll place apologized. As far as I know, it might just be isolated incidents. I don't know that we encountered too many people running into that yesterday.
How was voter turnout in Ferguson, all of this aside?
Well, we don't have exact numbers yet, but estimates for the county on the whole, and the county election, Ferguson is part of St. Louis County, were a larger turnout than normal. So ever since Michael Brown's death, you know, part of what people have been calling for is political action. When Sharpton was here in August, you know, telling people to vote, voter registration drives, all that sort of thing. So there was really a big push, you know, to speak with voting, to use voting as your voice to say, you know, I disapprove of what's going on, and use kind of the political system and that power. There was a rally put on by the National Action Network on Monday night, a voting rally, you know, to kind of get people pumped up. And it was very much about, you know, go out and vote. And even if we don't necessarily, the people who we want to win don't win, it's about making a statement that, you know, we have a voice in this, and you can't ignore this voice any longer. So at least making a dent and showing, you know, that people will go and show up for these midterm elections.
Were conversations that have opened up about racial divisions, inequality, and police militarization, the things that Ferguson has unfortunately come to represent, were those part of the conversations leading up to this election?
Definitely. I think there's been a lot of demands made by activists and people involved, you know, that are about race, that are about the way that police handle things, racial profiling, all these things. So there's a lot of demands and a lot of things that people want from their elected officials. And I think going into voting, a lot of people are thinking about, well, who's actually going to listen to me? Who's going to get these things done? That sort of thing. So I think that a lot of the conversations that have been taking place over the past few months have definitely played into what people are thinking about when they're going to the polls.
Let's get back to this big question about what life is like in Ferguson today. Looking back on the last 3 months, what would you say the overall storyline has been there on the ground in Ferguson for the people who are living and breathing this?
So for me, I moved to St. Louis just shortly, 3 weeks before Michael Brown was shot.
Wow.
So, I've seen kind of Ferguson change in that way, I guess, as well. Ferguson is this, it's a small, relatively small community, just over 20,000. It looks kind of like any other town in a lot of ways if you were to go there. There's, you know, one side of town that has, you know, the police station, and it's historic and old, and there's a brewery and coffee shops. And then there's kind of another side to the town, which is where there's more renting, there's apartment complexes, there's low-rise strip malls and payday loan stores and that sort of thing. So there is kind of two different kind of aspects to this town. And I would say that the town has changed in the sense that now a lot of people are aware that there is that other side of town, that there are people in their community and people in their neighborhood, their neighbors, who don't feel like they're a part of that community. So I think that's something that has changed over the past 3 months. Also, it's different in the sense that you mentioned a little bit in the intro about, you know, the way media has impacted things. A lot of people feel like their town has been misrepresented by the media, that, you know, this is not some huge racial tension issues, et cetera, in this community, that this is, you know, this could happen anywhere sort of thing. So I think the way people in Ferguson interact with media has definitely changed, and the way protesters have interacted with media has also definitely changed over the past 3 months. It's a community that's very much trying to heal itself in a lot of ways right now. There's a lot of meetings. Meetings have been run by the Department of Justice, city council meetings.
Who attends these meetings?
The meetings, so we've got Ferguson residents who attend, and it tends to be older residents. It tends to be older residents, long-established residents who've lived in the area longer. But then people like Alexis Templeton, who's a young person who's extremely active.
Who we'll be hearing from shortly.
Who we'll be hearing from shortly, yes. Who's a protester. She'll also go to these meetings. But I guess I would say that she's one of the few younger people who will go to these meetings. I don't know that there is necessarily a solid dialogue taking place between a lot of the people who are still out protesting and a lot of the people, long-term residents in Ferguson.
Yeah, you mentioned... You mentioned the two sides of the city and the two aspects of that town. Are both of those communities united in any of these meetings, or do the meetings sort of reinforce those dividing lines?
I think that they want the meetings to be a place where, you know, that where people from all over the community can come, but I don't know if that's the reality of what's happening. I think that a lot of people who are new to the community are, you know, renting, aren't necessarily involved in these community meetings, even though, you know, those are the kind of connections that need to be taking place in these spaces. So I'd say that there's an effort, but I don't necessarily know that it's come to fruition. And I think part of it is some people in Ferguson really want this to be over. They want to go into healing. They want, it's not that they don't want the community to change, but they're ready for, you know, the protest, for all this attention, for everything to stop, for it to kind of go back to normal. But a lot of people are on the other side of that. And like, we can't go back to normal. You know, this is the new normal. So I think that's kind of a clash that's going on right now in the community. Is there's very much people who want things to return, are tired of the protests, and there's people who are like, there's no way that we can stop doing this. This is something we have to continue to fight for and be out for, and this is how we have to do it.
I'd like to bring a Ferguson resident into this conversation. Alexis Templeton, welcome to this discussion. Can you tell me a little bit about, just to back up, what your experience in Ferguson was like in the days and weeks after Michael Brown was shot?
Thank you for having me first. And so I was in Phoenix, Arizona, visiting family when Michael Brown was first shot and killed. I came home 5 days later, and I immediately hit the ground. And I've been on the ground ever since.
What does that mean, exactly, hitting the ground for you?
Hitting the ground means being out protesting, being out active, standing in front of the riot lines, being face-to-face with the police, you know, getting arrested, all of it. That was me for, 89 days now? It's been 89 days.
So you're counting it in days, not months, because it sounds like it's very all-consuming for you.
Tomorrow it'll be 3 months, but the days start to blend together, so we do count it by days, yes, ma'am.
So you're a member of Millennial Activists United, is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about that group?
Yes, ma'am. We're actually a grassroots organization founded on the ground. People that I was standing, you know, putting my life into their hands every night, had no idea who they are. We just kind of came together. We saw that there was a youth divide. There was a youth gap within people on the ground. There were a lot of older people trying to take over, but there wasn't too many youth voices. So we came together to bridge that gap, and that's how the organization formed. It's about youth empowerment and letting them know, you know, that this is their movement and this is their time.
How old are you?
I'm 20 years old.
Are a lot of your friends involved with you on this, or are you meeting people through this? Because it sounds like the young people, from what you're saying and from what Emmanuel was saying, are kind of in the minority on this.
Absolutely. My friends are definitely, they're behind me, but they're behind me at home. So they're not coming out. A lot of my friends, a lot of my family now is people that I've met on the ground. Yes, ma'am.
How has your community overall been changed by all of this in the months that have passed since, in the 89 days that have passed?
As a Ferguson resident for 13 years, before this happened, you know, I never attended a city council meeting. I never went to a town hall meeting. As a matter of fact, I didn't know about them. I didn't know that we had a newsletter that came to houses and things like that. I didn't know much. And so now that this has happened, and I attend these city council meetings, and I, you know, I actually talk to these residents, and they actually want to talk to me, because before there was just like this, they don't want to speak to you. You know, they would go on about their day and just kind of look at you. But now at city council meetings, people speak to me. People wait for me to get on the microphone to address the council and to address the crowd. The gap, you know, and I wouldn't say the racial divide is starting to come together, but people are starting to acknowledge that there is one, so that there can be a start to bridge that gap. People are starting to realize that there is an age gap, that there is some ageism going on, and people are starting, they acknowledge that, and they're trying to sit down at the table with the younger people to understand. Not that we have that many young people coming to these meetings, but they're open for the discussion.
Do you and your friends and relatives and neighbors talk about the media presence in your community?
No, and yes and no. My grandma, I live with my grandmother, and she hates that this is going on. And so when she talks to me about media and people getting involved, it's more so she doesn't want them around her house. You know, make sure people don't find out where we stay.
Emmanuel, I want to turn to you on that, too. Is your sense that the national media, people who came in to be part of the reporting on this, have packed their bags and gone home? Or is there still a national media presence there in Ferguson?
There's still a small national media presence here. I still see CNN around occasionally and, you know, a couple other papers flying people in and out. But it's not what it was in those first kind of initial weeks. And I think the media storm and the attention there, I think it definitely impacted the way residents interact with media. I've been in situations where I've been just doing my job, like say it's a rally for Michael Brown, or I went, I think, right after his memorial was burnt down a while ago, and I went, you know, to go and check it out and report on that. And I was vetted by residents.
What do you mean by that? What kind of vetting?
Like if I were to go to a formal press event, they would be like, where's your press pass? And I would check in and that sort of thing. But these are just people who live in the apartment complex where Michael Brown was shot. Where's your press pass? Where's your identification? All right, you're good. We trust you. So that's something that has definitely changed as things have gone on. I think people have become more media savvy in a way. And this has been a whole kind of different experience for them with media and the way they interact with the media.
Alexis, do you is the overriding feeling one of suspicion of the media, or one of like that the media can get this story out, can broadcast voices and get a large audience and build support outside of the community?
At first, it started with, you know, we wanted the national media to get this story out. But then now, the protesters are completely against media, completely against them, because, you know, we'll be protesting, you know, you'll go home. Some people will go home and catch, you know, like the 10 o'clock news, and they'll see themselves on camera, or they'll see fellow protesters out, or they'll hear the stories that are being told, and it's a completely different story. And they're like, wait a minute, that's not what happened, because I was definitely there, you know, so they definitely... protesters have watched the media paint a different narrative than what's actually going on.
And I think to add to that, I think some people have been a little bit arrogant in the media about it, as if you need us to tell your story. But social media has really changed things in this situation.
Well, we're going to get right back to that. Emmanuel Berry, Alexis Templeton, stay with me through a quick break, okay? Central Standard will pick right back up with this conversation about Ferguson. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to Central Standard. We're talking this morning about Ferguson, Missouri, in the aftermath of midterm elections and also at nearly the three-month mark since the shooting of Michael Brown. Emmanuel Berry is with us from St. Louis Public Radio, and Alexis Templeton is a resident of Ferguson who's with Millennial Activists United. And Emmanuel, right before we were going to break, you were talking about increasing suspicion of media, as well as just the sense that it's not the case as it once was, that people rely on the media to broadcast their story. Could you pick up where you left off on that?
Yeah. Social media has played a huge role in this movement from the beginning. And while media does play a very important role, I think a lot of activists and a lot of people are realizing that social media is also a really powerful tool for getting information out. So protesters have come with their own newsletter. They put out the news themselves in a way. And I think some people have approached them, you know, people who protesters like, well, we don't want to talk to you, with the attitude of, well, you need us. You need us to get your story out. And that's not necessarily the case in the same way. I'm not saying that media plays an extremely important role for this. I'm a journalist. I wouldn't try and like give away my job. But I think that, you know, that there is kind of this realization that, you know, there is another way to get this information out. I think one of the important roles that media is playing in this, or should be playing in this, is, you know, there is, because there is such a vast amount of information available on Twitter and there are all these rumors kind of constantly flying. It's important for us to kind of vet that and find the truth within these strands and make sure, you know, we're being accurate and sharing the right information. But yeah, Twitter and Facebook and all these things have definitely changed the role that media is playing in this situation.
Alexis, for you, you were saying that that the early eagerness to share things with reporters was changed when you saw that stories you had witnessed, events you had witnessed, weren't being reflected accurately in the reporting you were seeing. Can you give an example of that?
Perfect example is actually the last city council meeting I went to, and I believe I was on Channel 2, and, you know, they came and they Channel 5 and Channel 2, and they came and asked me a few questions about the actual city council meeting, and that's actually when I was, when I got onto the mic and I told the residents that I was proud of them, because this is the first time I had ever seen a unified group come together and actually have a conversation in these city council meetings, to actually come together to try and, you know, better the community. And so they came and they were talking to me about it, and they were like, what does this mean for Ferguson? I'm like, it means that, you know, this is a step towards peace, and this is a step towards unity, and this is a step towards, you know, moving forward. And they took sound bites of it and made it seem like I was saying that, like, the protests need to stop. Because I was confronted by protesters who were like, so you said that everything is looking peaceful in Ferguson? And I'm like, no, I never said that. That's not what I was talking about.
Yeah, unity and peace not being synonyms. So,
exactly.
Alexis, for you, what would be, like, the best thing you could see happen in Ferguson right now?
Right now, the best thing that I could see happening in Ferguson as a Ferguson resident, as a protester, is to see the chief of police step down.
And, you know, a grand jury decision is expected this month. And so as far as your goals, you would like to see legal change, formal change, systemic change. But, Emmanuel, how is Ferguson preparing for the community response to the grand jury decision, whichever way it goes?
I think we've all kind of been living in a state of a little bit of anxiety with this decision hanging over. I'm talking about people in Ferguson as well as the media. People are preparing in different ways. People are preparing either way that there will be action, whether it's celebration or whether it's anger and frustration. I was talking with a pastor yesterday who's talking about opening safe zones in churches. You know, there's other people who are concerned about safety, concerned about potential looting, those sorts of activities. Police are also preparing by purchasing more gear. Yeah, everyone's kind of preparing for something to happen. We don't know what that looks like. It could end up being something. It could end up being, you know, the peaceful protests that we've been seeing for, you know, the past several months that have been acts of civil disobedience, but by no means violent. Or it could turn violent like it did in those first couple of days. We don't really know. Or it could be a celebration for people in the community. I think we're none of us are really sure what's going to happen. I don't think anyone knows what is going to happen at this point after a decision from the grand jury is handed down.
Alexis, do your fellow protesters, activists seem to agree with you that the chief of police stepping down is a priority, is a goal?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have deemed him incompetent. And we think it's, we don't think that it'll be a, you know, that it'll make people go home or it'll solve anything as far as, you know, justice for Michael Brown. We haven't received anything on the side of law enforcement. They've been taking, arresting, tear gassing, macing, you know, beating, whatever. And we haven't seen anything from them at all. You know, we haven't seen anything from these councilmen. We haven't seen anything, you know, from Steve Singer, who was just reelected. We haven't seen anything from him either.
Is there anything they could have done that would have made you feel like you were being paid attention to, or that to give you a sense of good faith?
Something small would have been responding to people who were getting up and voicing their concerns at city council meetings. They just kind of sat there and stared at them and actually told them beforehand that they would not be responding, that they would take down questions. But they never responded to those questions. So that's just something small they could have done. Another thing they could have done was acknowledge the situation, acknowledge the pain people were going through. So many people, you know, it wasn't just two people sitting in these meetings. You had 50 people turning out, and they weren't showing any regards of sympathy or understanding or acknowledgement of what was happening. It was just like, oh, they're here again. As a matter of fact, you know, they started to have police come in and sit in on these town hall meetings. I mean, on these city council meetings, not in Ferguson, which is St. Louis County, to give you some context.
Yeah.
They would have police come in and sit in, like, right behind the protesters, almost as an intimidation factor. Like, they can't come in and voice their concerns, like they aren't residents.
What has the police presence been like in Ferguson over, you know, in the early days, there was a lot of coverage of that, but has there still been an increased police presence there in your community?
St. Louis County, Ferguson isn't present as far as interacting with the protesters. That's St. Louis County. So St. Louis County is still on the lot of the Ferguson Police Department. They've kind of been stationed there until, I guess, I don't know. They've been stationed there till whenever, until they've been told to go home. But the police presence hasn't been as big as it was. No, ma'am. It has died down. But also on the other side, the protesting side, a lot of people, it's getting cold outside. A lot of people have, you know, stopped coming out so much.
Do you have the feeling that the people of your community overall would like to see more protest and hopefully a lot of change coming out of that protest? Or are there people who are seeming to feel like, gosh, you know, all I want is for life to go back to normal?
People definitely want things to go back to normal. But I think they heard us, you know, after like 85 days. I don't know when they finally started to hear us, that we weren't going anywhere and this was not going back to normal. And they were like, okay, well, if it's not going back to normal, we need to try and work together to operate in this new normal so that we can, you know, that we can create some change and everybody can be happy so there can be some peace and quiet.
Emmanuel, does this resonate with what you've been seeing and hearing in your reporting?
Yeah, I definitely think that there has been a change in attitude because it has gone on so long. And, you know, that this has become, it is the new normal for this community in some ways. And I think, you know, that there people realize that they need to reach out and understand why people are so upset. And I think that for a lot of people, there's been a change in mindset within the community about what their community is, what Ferguson really is as a whole. But at the same time, there are still some people who just want it to stop. But I do think that the community is going to come out stronger and in a different community as time goes on.
How has being a reporter there changed as a result of the national spotlight on this particular community?
How has being a reporter changed? It's made my job a little harder, I think.
You get calls from Kansas City.
Yeah, no, a little bit more chaotic, I guess, and also because there is a larger media presence, it's harder to get to people because, like we said, there is a little bit more of, you know, what people aren't as willing to talk to the media anymore. And, you know, like the national media comes and they swoop in and they swoop out. But like, we live here. Like, this is our community that we had to continue to live with and work in. So it's, I don't know, it's been a little
bit. You have some relationship building to do.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess we've had to do that quicker and in a different way because of the situation. It's become harder to build those relationships. You know, I think I've done a pretty good job. Trying to really find sources and find key people within the community, but yeah, I think it's been difficult because it is such an issue with so many people focused on it on a national scale and people coming in and out.
Well, speaking of reporting, I know you've got to get back to it. So, Emmanuel Berry, speaking with us from St. Louis Public Radio, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And Alexis Templeton, we do have a few more minutes before we go. You live in Ferguson. Do you know people who have left Ferguson or who you think would like to leave Ferguson as a result of all of this? Have you yourself ever thought about that in the last 3 months?
I don't know anybody who's packed up and left. I know people who have gotten up and said that they've thought about moving or they've seen their neighbors put up for sale sign. I have not thought about leaving. You know, I feel like, you know, anywhere I go, that's one of the bigger issues with this. You know, I feel like anywhere I go in St. Louis, this is still a problem. This is still an issue. So it doesn't matter whether I'm living in Ferguson or whether I'm living in Jennings, which is another county in St. Louis. It's still going to be the same issue.
Is there anything you want people who live outside of Ferguson, outside of St. Louis, who have never set foot in your community to know about the place you call home, something you suspect they wouldn't take away from this particular news story that's captivated the nation?
I want them to know that the people who are out here actively fighting, and I use fighting very loosely, and I actually out there fighting, but the people who are out there fighting for the justice for Michael Brown and for the right to be out there, it's because it's their human right to be, they're completely peaceful. That's the first thing I want people to know, because that gets misconstrued that there's rioting and there's looting and there's arguing and there's yelling, and that's not true. Even within my own community, the residents watch the news and that's what they see. So they're automatically afraid of the protesters. And, you know, that also brings about a divide in our community, a bigger divide than there already was. The second thing I want people to know about Ferguson is that, you know, that people are stepping up and people are taking steps towards, you know, making this a better community.
What kinds of steps, other than what we've already heard about, are there steps that haven't come up in this conversation that you want people to know are things that are happening underneath the surface, under our radar, perhaps?
Absolutely. Actually, last city council meeting, a group came together, a group, you know, of diverse people. They created a group called One Ferguson, and they're all Ferguson residents. And it's about, you know, bringing the community together, community building, bringing understanding about the community. Working with residents, you know, to get their concerns and get their complaints and get these conversations about race and ageism and anything they want to talk about together that could possibly better the community. And they came together a couple weeks ago.
Well, Alexis Templeton, Ferguson resident and member of Millennial Activists United, thanks so much for sharing your point of view with us today.
Thank you for having me.
When Central Standard returns, we'll hear from a KU researcher who studies the changing nature of personal relationships in Japan. Stay with us.